Well, welcome back for part two of tonight's festivities. And I'm still Robert Winters, and it's still February 7th. So just continuing a little bit of sort of what went down last night at City Hall and has been going down for a while. One of the issues that has sort of turned into a bit of a flashpoint lately has to do with an initiative that was called, it was passed a few years ago, called the Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance, which was all about disclosure a few years ago, but now there are proposed changes that would actually mandate that residential property owners, commercial property owners, would have to retrofit their buildings, at least buildings over a certain size, at significant cost. And it was originally supposed to be with a deadline of a year 2050, which seems sort of reasonable, I guess, because you got to update systems eventually anyway. But they wanted to accelerate it to 2035. Now, I don't know exactly where their proposed deadline lies right now, but it is brought up a lot of very interesting issues in my view. Patrick Barrett knows a lot more about this than I do, but there are a few things that I can say to this, which is, the provisions that were proposed were relatively unknown, except for some sort of inside players until relatively late in the game. And now many of the larger condominium buildings with a lot of condominiums in them, the property owners have now been made aware of it. And they're becoming a bit of a real political force right now. They're kind of outraged that so much as additional cost is just going to be heaped upon them. And they've been organizing and coming to meetings and speaking of it. And now the city council is, trying to navigate the rough political waters of this. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to mention about this is basically it's the abuse of the word crisis. OK, so the justification from Iram Farouk in the within the Community Development Department, and also amongst a few city councilors like Councilor Nolan, it basically says, well, we have to do things because of the climate crisis. So in other words, don't just do it because it's a good idea and eventually you should do it anyway. It seems to me like it's becoming kind of standard political, part of the standard political playbook, that you cry crisis and then you basically justify it in anything you want. You can impose any change you like, okay? So whether it's, climate crisis means we're gonna impose pretty harsh burdens on property owners, or you say it's a housing crisis and therefore that justifies pretty much any and every possible change in zoning or otherwise. More on that in a bit. It just seems to me to be kind of bad form. To rather than just propose a good idea is to simply say, do what I tell you to do, because don't you know it's a crisis? And if you don't do what I tell you to do, then you're a terrible person. That's something I think a lot of people are becoming aware of, especially in the context of the so-called BUDO language, Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance, which really should no longer be called disclosure. It's really Building Energy Use Reduction Ordinance. Really, it's mandatory is what they're proposing. So there was something having to do with this on the agenda for last night's meeting, and that was made subject to the charter right by Councilor Toner, because there is committee meetings that are continuing to discuss this, and hopefully they'll come to some reasonable resolution. And actually what complicates this quite a bit is that apparently Eversource, which would be, the energy provider, really sole source provider here for us, apparently is quoted exactly how much money would be involved in doing a lot of the retrofits to their infrastructure. And it's extraordinarily high number. And now there was actually an article in the Boston Globe yesterday where city of Chelsea, I believe it was Chelsea or East Boston, basically crying foul, saying that all the resources are going to Kendall Square and places in Cambridge. So Cambridge wants to sort of do all these upgrades here at the expense of other cities and towns where the people there are lower income and probably would need the assistance more. So there are some new wrinkles to this argument that I think people should be aware of, right? Moving on, say that, you know, a sad moment at the city council meeting, I learned that my neighbor, Jane Richards, the wife of Bob Richards, these were like the king and queen of Antrim Street, you know, originators of the Antrim Street block party many years ago, but also very actively involved in civic and political affairs for as long as I can remember. So she passed away just a few days ago. So that was a very, very sad little bit of news. On the bright side, the city clerk's office has been catching up on its incredible backlog of city council committees that never bothered to report. They seem to be suggesting, oh, it's because of a turnover in the clerk's office, but come on, let's get serious. You know, there are actually some of the chairs of city council committees going back two terms, just never bothered to file reports. And as I've like to point out to people, I've been following things for a long time and that never happened before, but it's becoming, you know, the kind of civic political laziness of certain city council, councilors and committee chairs just seems to be abundant these days. Now there was, on the topic of city boards and commissions, you know, there's, yesterday was actually the deadline for maybe about five or more city boards for people who wanted to apply. There are still a couple more, I think the Cambridge Climate Committee, as well as Citizens Civic Unity Committee. That would be an interesting one to be on these days, quite honestly. But I've been waiting for sort of the big kahuna to come by, and apparently it arrived just yesterday. Which is an applications that are being sought for anybody who would like to serve on the Cambridge Planning Board. Now, going back as long as I can remember, there was even a proposed charter change to require approval of planning board appointees by the city council long before there was an actual charter change a couple of years ago to actually require such approvals. So the planning board appointments have always been, or not always, but for a long, long time have been, you know, kind of like under the microscope from some people, largely people who were, it's kind of interesting how times have changed. The people who were mainly clamoring for some better control over appointments to the planning board were people who were concerned about overdevelopment. And they thought that the planning board appointees were, you know, just basically giving a blank check to massive development around the city. Personally, my experience has been that they tend to be a bit more thoughtful than just that. But, you know, that was the interpretation. It's interesting how 20, 25 years later, now there seems to be a kind of a different mode where if the planning board shows some reticence about allowing very, very dense, very high, massive residential zoning changes, they're not inclined to go along with that. Groups like this, A Better Cambridge, better known as A Bigger Cambridge, raise objections to that. So anyway, so, you know everything is flipped sideways now. Anyway, there are these months from now, the applications will be due for the planning board. And because of this newfound confirmation role that the city council now has, it's going to be interesting to see not only whether they actually reject any appointments, or more likely, based on conversations that happened at a government operations committee last year, more likely what will happen is completely out of public view, members of the city council will talk to the manager and pretty much let it be known who they can and cannot appoint. Who he can and cannot appoint. In other words, if a person was a very qualified person who might be a perfect match for the planning board, but they did not agree with the agenda of this A Better Cambridge group to massively increase density and heights and throughout the city, it is quite likely that there might be five votes, basically to say, Mr. Manager, you better not appoint that person. So slowly but surely, the legislative hand is grabbing the throat of the executive here. And as far as I'm concerned, with the soon there will be announcements about appointments to the Board of Zoning Appeals, because those applications were due a month or so ago. And the next in the next month, the applications will be due for a planning board. Let's just see what happens. Let's just see what happens. Will we have a balanced planning board as we generally have had over the years? Will will it become a completely politicized body? That my fear is that it will become a completely politicized body, and to the detriment of us all. Anyway, it's coming. One other little twist is that for both Board of Zoning Appeal appointments as well as Planning Board appointments, there was a change, new policy from the city manager that, at least for the BZA, required a change in the zoning law to allow for compensation of those board meetings, those board members. So it's not like any member of any city board gets compensated, but some of the ones that are kind of more labor intensive, like Planning Board, Board of Zoning Appeals, I believe Conservation Commission may also get a little lunch money out of it here. But in the announcement for the Planning Board appointments, basically they said it's going to be $6,000 stipend per year. Now you're not going to raise a family on $6,000, but I guess the hope is that that might be just enough of an inducement for some people who might otherwise, not want to apply for the position to apply for the position. My guess is there's going to be hundreds of applications for this one. And of those hundreds, half or more are going to be of the activist community. And if I was city manager, I would never appoint an activist to a sensitive board like that. I want neutral parties on a board like that, but this will be a test of the city manager as well. We'll see how it goes. So anyway, as I said, there's a couple of other boards that are still seeking people, the Cambridge Citizens Committee on Civic Unity, as well as the Cambridge Climate Committee, formerly known as the Cambridge, it had acronym CPAC, Climate Protection Action Committee, I believe was what it called. Now they changed their name to Cambridge Climate Committee, which I guess makes some sense. Now, one thing that has been going on, it's actually happening right now, actually, as I speak, is there's this charter review committee that's been carrying on for a while, and they just moved their meeting up to tonight. So that's actually happening. I watch them when they're happening when I can, but oftentimes because of this conflict, I can't. So I review the recordings afterwards. So I've been pretty much up to speed on everything, what they've been doing. They actually had a public forum at the main library a few weeks ago that I attended, and I was pretty actively involved in the discussion there. It was actually kind of nice to have something that was not relegated to the Zoom world where you could actually have a back and forth interaction. I know that there's some real advantages to having Zoom in terms of public access for people who might have a hard time traveling to a public meeting. But the truth of the matter is that, and even John Hawkinson said this at that charter review forum, that in city council subcommittees, for example, they used to always allow some back and forth with the public. People, you'd say something, somebody said, well, what did you mean by that, Mr. Winters? And you'd have a little bit of back and forth. That typically wouldn't happen, at least hasn't happened in 25 years at city council that way. But one of the real problems with this Zoomy world is that basically you're being segregated. You're basically saying, okay, you're a member of the public, show up at either the beginning of the meeting or the end of the meeting, say your 2 minutes of whatever, and then shut up, No opportunity for interaction, even if you've got a lot of good things to say, and even if there are questions. I did speak at the during the public comment period of the most recent charter review committee, and I thought I had some good things to say, and at least one of the members basically stepped up and said, "How can we find out more about what he's talking about?" Right? Because there really is a place for that kind of interaction. You don't have to be appointed member of a body or even an elected official. You should still at least have some opportunity for an actual conversation. And in our Zoomy little world, we just don't have a whole lot of that going on, which I think is really a shame. By the way, speaking of the charter review, you know, I think that committee is actually reaching the point of maturation where there are some ideas they're sort of saying, like, I don't know about that, and where they're actually entertaining some thing matters of substance. Whether they get anything accomplished, you know, in time for the scheduled June 30th deadline, which they can extend a bit, for a report to the city council, we'll see. But some people have floated notions about, instead of having it all at large city councilors, that we should return to having ward councilors. I don't know that that's really going anywhere, but it's an interesting idea, because it's a reflection in many respects of the perception that many people in the public feel correctly, that they're not getting heard. And they feel, if we had a ward councilor, then they would be obliged to listen to us. I'm not so sure that's true, especially if that one person who is your ward councilor had a completely different point of view, in which case you might be better off with an at-large city councilor where you can go to any councilor. You know? But anyway, so that's one of the things they talk about. People have been talking about possibly changing the length of the terms from 2-year terms for city councilors, let's say, to 4. I think they haven't really thought that through. One particular aspect of such a change is that, generally speaking, when you go beyond about 1 or 2 year terms, then you really have to write recall provisions, because what happens if you're, you know, 2 years in and you realize your elected official is a dud, like a real problem, right? You know, so the people have nothing, no choice but to wait out the 4 years. I mean, goodness sake, even the presidential, we can impeach presidents, but you can't impeach city councilors. You can't do anything. And if they were to write in a recall provision, which I would think they would have to do if they were to extend the terms, how do you do that in the context of proportional representation elections where people are elected at large? I don't even know how you would even imagine such a thing. So I think that addressing the issue of people, the perception that people have of not being sufficiently heard is a serious matter, but you could probably do it in other ways. And I actually wrote a little bit of a piece about basically borrowing some language from the 1846 charter, having to do with something that's even in the US Constitution, specifically about redress of grievances. So in other words, there was an example a few months ago where almost 1,000 people wrote a petition asking the city council to do something about something up in North Mass Ave. And it was simply placed on file. In other words, the petition goes nowhere, right? I am of the opinion that this Charter Review Committee, and then eventually the city council itself, and the voters eventually, should actually consider a modest change in the charter, which would guarantee your ability as citizens to have some redress of grievances, so that if you file a certain number of petitions, very much similar to like a way a referendum might work, but with a much lower signature threshold, then you would, your elected officials would be required to answer you and to vote. So that's one idea. Other matters that could be, some people seem to like the idea of going to a directly elected mayor. I'm a little skeptical about that, but you know, it's not a crazy idea. A somewhat more severe notion would be to change from to a quote strong mayor. Now, a strong mayor would effectively be what our city manager is today. Now, I don't know that there's a lot of appetite for getting rid of the city manager form of the government or our proportional representation elections. But there are some opportunities for some tweaks and some modifications that I think might make some sense. I mean, you know, in various times in the past, I've certainly spoken to the fact that, you know, the fact that our proportional representation elections have a modest but an actual dependence on the order in which ballots are counted, which is a real problem if there's a recount, because they have to match the order in which they were counted. And it's just sort of a nightmare. It's very time consuming and really unnecessary. But we couldn't change it unless there was a change in the charter or an act of the legislature to permit it. So this is an opportunity to make a minor tweak to basically allow ballot order independent elections using what are sometimes called fractional voting, fractional transfers. We don't need to get into the details of that here right now, but it's possible to do, it's not hard to do. And in fact, the very software that we use for the vote tabulation of our municipal elections, the default system would be that one. And we actually have to override that to enact the current Cambridge rules. So basically we could just get rid of the Cambridge rules and just use the default. So it would be very simple to implement. So anyway, so those are some of the things that are sort of potentially on the table. There was, in addition to that library event that I mentioned for the Charter Review Committee, which I'm very glad they did it, not only because they also had cookies and pastries and coffee, which I shouldn't have been drinking at that hour of the day anyway, but I did. But there was also a Zoom-based meeting, which I guess is recorded. I'll look it up, but I don't think it's going to match the quality of something you can actually have in person. There have been a bunch of people writing letters to the Charter Review Committee, basically taking issue with the notion that had been floated about having ward counselors in addition to at-large counselors. But a lot of the names were recognizable. So there was pretty clearly an organized effort from the bicycle activists, who apparently like the fact that they have a little bit of an advantage in terms of their politicking when it's all at large, and that they were a little worried that if you actually had neighborhood ward-based counselors in a future system, that maybe that might not work out so well. I think there are some other activists who prefer to have everything at large, for similar reasons. Maybe some that sort of the subsidized housing activists, maybe they prefer that as well. So anyway, it's quite something. By the way, I actually should mention this in the last half hour, but I will mention it right now, because I have the access to the voter databases and the voter history files going back a long, long time. I've been, over the many years, one of the tests I do is to sort of see how create my new database each time. I do a test where I say, I count how many people have never missed an election since 1997, a local election or a citywide election. So that would include presidential primaries as well, because they're citywide. And used to be hundreds of people, but it's been getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. So as of this past November, it was down to just 93 of us, I'm part of the club. So I just want to point out with the passing of Sheila Russell and Alice Wolf, they were both super voters. So we're now down to 91. So that's of no great consequence, but again, I know most of the people who are the super voters. I recognize almost all the names. So anyway, it's an interesting thing. Now, I think maybe just in the last few minutes, I'll just kind of emphasize something that I guess I feel pretty strongly about, which is, so tomorrow there is I forget exactly what time, but there is a housing committee meeting, subcommittee meeting, having to do with this proposal that was floated last November called the Amendments to the AHO Ordinance. That's Affordable Housing Overlay. Now, regardless how people may feel about the Affordable Housing Overlay, I was not particularly enamored of any rule that basically treats different people differently. In other words, if you're a property owner, you're a property owner. These are the rules, that's the rules, that's all there is to it. But they wanted to give an advantage to developers of what they call 100% affordable housing, which basically means subsidized housing. And they really skewed the numbers so that, if I had property and I wanted to do something, I could build up this, that big. But then if I was just a starter of the Cambridge Housing Authority, I could build that big. Essentially that it's a rough idea of the idea there. But now apparently it didn't generate as much as maybe they thought, even though experts told them that this whole scheme was a little fishy. But So then they came, some counselors came in, and activists with this A Better Cambridge group came in and basically said, well, let's just rip it all to shreds, and let's allow new densities and heights that are just dramatically off out of scale. So for example, along some of the major corridors, which, you know, includes places like Broadway, Cambridge Street, Prospect Street, whatever, where you typically see buildings that are, you know, 35, 40, there are a few apartment buildings that are six stories tall, whatever. Basically, they would just say you can go up to 13 stories on those. My entire neighborhood, there's one kind of completely out of place building that's, you know, it's 10 stories tall, and people, it has no context at all with the rest of the neighborhood. But they want to just sort of rip it up and just say, if you want to go up, sky's the limit. They actually eliminate the FAR requirements entirely for buildings over certain, you know, over, when the density is over 1.0, you could go up to infinity, essentially. So anyway, they're having that meeting now, and all the activists are basically calling out the troops to try and pack the meetings. I think it's a horrifying idea, even though I do agree that there is some room for some additional density, and there's certainly some room for more, you know, housing that's accessible to more people. But this is a crazy idea. This is honestly an absolutely ludicrous proposal, but it might actually have 5 votes, which I find horrifying. Which I suppose basically brings us back to the last thing I'll mention here, which is just the last 30 seconds, which is that this is a municipal election year, folks. Please pay attention. See who's proposing crazy stuff and don't vote for them. And see who's proposing sane stuff and give them a second thought. So I'll talk more about municipal elections and candidates in the days to come. But I think let's just leave it hanging at that, and we'll talk to you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.